Welcome to the Penis Project podcast, connecting men through science, stories, solutions, but most of all, through support. This podcast was founded by myself and Dr. Joe Milios, a physiotherapist. To find out more about us, check out our website, thepenisproject.org. I'm Melissa Hadley-Barrett, sexologist and nurse practitioner, specialising in men's intimate health. Join me as I break down the barriers surrounding men's health and have candid conversations about everything you've always wanted to know, but were too embarrassed to ask. This podcast is dedicated to stories from men who have bravely recognised the importance of sharing their experiences, breaking down stigmas, and having no filter chats about sexual health, cancer treatment and recovery, relationships, and everything else in between. If you know someone who you think would benefit from this information, please share so we can help more people. We would also love it if you'd follow the podcast and give us a review. Welcome to the Penis Project podcast. I'm very excited because today we have Dr. Joe back, and we've also got a guest all the way from Canada. We're going to speak to George today, and George is going to tell us about his prostate cancer journey in Canada and then what happened when he came to Australia and met Joe and I. So welcome, George, and welcome, Jojo. Excited to have you.
Hello. It's good to be back.
It's good to be here.
So tell us first about what's your journey.
A year ago, I went in for the operation and had my prostate removed and spent 52 days in the hospital afterwards. And that was mainly because I got infections. I got fluid on my lungs. My temperature went up to 41 degrees.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And I don't remember a lot of my time in the hospital because I was delirious.
And because you almost lost your life, didn't you?
Yes, three times I went over. My daughter's living in Australia, and she flew over with her family, a three-month-old baby and her husband, to say goodbye.
Did she?
That's awful. So that must have been so hard on you and your wife.
It was very hard on my wife. I was oblivious to a lot of it because of the delirious that I was. I thought I was in Mexico for a while, and I thought I was in Mexico. And I was mad at the nurses because they wouldn't move my bed so I'd have an ocean view.
Wow.
And what were you really looking at?
The parking lot.
It sounds like it was actually quite enjoyable for you.
And why do you think you had, I mean, you would have been told probably as standard here, two or three nights in hospital. What was the complication mainly?
They told me one night I would be in and out. I guess they didn't connect the tube right or something. They had to go back in and reconnect it.
Yeah, it sounds like the anastomosis where the urethra and the bladder joint broke down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And through that I got infections. I got fluid on the lungs and they were draining all tubes everywhere. I kept pulling them out. I got really good at pulling them out.
Oh, right, okay.
Because you were delirious.
Because I was delirious, yeah. So that was always exciting. The nurse got really mad at me one time, so I pulled it halfway out and I realized what I was doing, so I put it back in.
Oh, no, you're like the nightmare patient. And so then what happened after the 52 days? You eventually got well.
I did. Well, 52 days, I came out. I had a catheter in for 3 months.
On top of the 52 days?
No, including
yeah. So another month, basically.
Another month after I was out. And then I met a couple physios that I went and saw over in Canada, and they talked about the work that you people were doing over here, and I was coming over. So I thought I'd stop in and see how things are going and see if some work would help me.
So after they finally took the catheter out, you were incontinent, weren't you?
Yes, very much so. I was going through about 8 diapers a day, full pull-up, heavy-duty diapers a day.
Wow. And so did they tell you about the podcast, or they just told you to come and see Joe when you were in Perth?
She told me that I should contact Joe.
Yeah.
So I received this email one day, and I was like, oh, this sounds very exciting. Someone's been given the opportunity to come over this way for a period of time, because if you were just hopping over for a week, it wouldn't have probably been so helpful. But was it 7 weeks, a couple of months?
7 weeks, yeah.
So we've been able to, in the meantime, refer you on to Melissa as well.
Exactly. And that's been interesting at the least.
So first up, I think you and Joe should chat about what's happened with your continent since then. So you've been in Perth now for 7 weeks altogether, haven't you?
7 weeks when I leave, which I've 6 weeks now, another week, and then I'm leaving.
Yeah. So I think start off with how much fluid you were losing at the beginning and then what's happening now and what Joe's done.
Well, I was still wearing the full diaper, and if I went golfing or did any activities, I'd put a heavy-duty pad in with it so that I have the two of them together. And I was going through about 4 to 6 diapers a day at the time. And Joe, first time I met her, she says, well, usually it only takes about 2 or 3 weeks.
Two or 3 months to get completely recovered. And I actually met you on the first year anniversary of your radical prostatectomy. So that was the 18th of October.
Yes.
So today's the 22nd. So it's only like four and a half weeks since we met, in actual fact.
Yes. And it's been amazing. All the special exercises I've been doing. I now don't wear one at night. I have a light pad for the day, just in case if I'm going out. And it's been just...
And no diapers.
And no diapers. No.
So what did Joe teach you differently to that you were learning back home?
One of the things was to do my exercises standing up, which has made a lot of difference, and to do more of them.
That's what your PhD showed, wasn't it, Joe?
Yeah, it did. But another thing is that for some reason, just about every physiotherapist from it with a musculoskeletal background as well does this. They start teaching people to do about 20 different exercises like bridges and core strengthening exercises, and very rarely is there a target or focus on the one little thing, the external urethral sphincter and that urinary sphincter. So all we had to do was think about where George was leaking and then adapt around how we could improve and what his lifestyle was all about. But I've always said there's really no point teaching and assessing and getting you to do the exercise training in a position where you don't actually have too much of a problem. So it's all about gravity and your own body weight. And you asked me that question this morning because it's still been hard to understand why you don't have that leakage problem.
Yeah, lying down, you can feel it so much more. Like when you're doing the exercise, it just, you feel everything happening a lot more. Your whole body is, I guess, relaxed, and you're able to concentrate better on those muscles. And standing up, now you're doing a lot of other things, balance, and it's just a lot harder to do, to focus in on the muscle when you're...
So it's harder to do, for sure, and that's why it's good to start there. And then you get accustomed to what you need to utilize afterwards. So really been quite a swift improvement in a pretty relatively short period of time. And I've seen George glow along with his wife as well, because she's been coming in, just seeing that progression and really feeling like you were in charge of it, I think.
Definitely. It's been so exciting.
So did you find the techniques that Joe taught you were quite different to what you were doing before?
Not so much different, just little tweaks here and there that made the difference.
Isn't it amazing that such small differences? So, Joe, what do you think those small differences are? So people listening might be able to make
them. We're not getting carried away with doing all these other exercises that don't close off the urethral sphincter. So the bridging and the sit-ups and things like that, they're kind of accessory muscles that can come to help, but they're not the focal point and shouldn't be. So it's just not making the person, the individual, overloaded with all these other exercises that are going to not give him that much bang for buck. So it's doing the minimal amount, accurately, the right focus, in the right position that targets it. And that's what I researched to try and show, just this simple endeavour, plus the fast and the slow twitch fibre combination, the quick ones and the holding ones. A lot of the time, and I don't know if you were taught this, but we also used to have everyone be taught, and we had someone today who picked up a pamphlet that said, squeeze the back passage as if stopping wind. And that's not really going to help the urinary continence. So a lot of the information's a bit outdated still as well. Mm. So if you're focusing on the back passage, even if you do the back passage and then the front passage, you're still going to get nowhere near the efficiency and effectiveness from just doing the front passage. Yeah.
So I think we should do something different today, and we're going to see if George can talk us through how to do a pelvic floor exercise. So what did Joe teach you?
Basically, I have to relax my abdominals, squeeze the front passage, lift the nuts to the guts, and keep breathing.
Right. And how many times a day do you have to do that?
I do that 3 times minimum.
Okay. And how many in each set?
I do 10 times 10.
And 10 quick ones? And they take 1 second each, yet?
Yeah. 10 quick ones. And then I do 10 sets of those 3 times a day.
Okay. And that's made such a big difference. So now I think we need to get the expert to explain. Because I was just saying that always Joe send people to episode 4. If anyone wants to get an anatomy lesson from Joe, it's in episode 4, and she also talks this through. But I think it would be good to get you to do it again because we're up to 154 episodes now. So it'd be nice to have a more up-to-date one.
Okay, so if you're in standing, best thing to do is just completely relax your belly and your buttock muscles. And now don't worry about your breath. A lot of people feel they have to take a big breath in, like before they even start. But all that does is depress or lower the pelvic floor, and we prefer it just to be sitting there ready. And don't worry about your breath having to be part of the exercise. So you want to gently focus on squeezing the front passage as if you're stopping the flow of your urine, and then gently draw the testes up or lift your nuts to your guts, and then let go. Now what we do is we do 10 of those rapidly. At about 1 second or faster, squeeze, lift, let go, squeeze, lift, let go, followed by 10 where you hold for up to 10 seconds. And this is where the breath is really important, to keep breathing and count out loud as you're doing that sustained hold. 1, 2, 3. And as you breathe, you will naturally breathe in and out and keep that going rather than take a big breath, holding your breath, and then at the end letting it go. Because it's just going to upend what we actually want to do. So one set is 10 rapid ones, 1 second each, followed by 10 holding. But you might want to start at a 2 or 3 second hold, but always have an equal rest time.
So the quick set is lift, 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 lift 10 times.
Yep.
And the slow set is lift and hold if you can to 10 seconds.
Yep.
Then release, then lift and hold.
Yep, but you want to release for the equal time as well. So you want to have a decent rest time.
So 10 hold and 10 second down.
Yep.
If you can.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
And at 100% of your maximum contraction. Now, if you had pain, we'd normally say to people do the complete opposite, something called reverse Kegels or down training. You go lift the pelvic floor with about 50% of your effort, hold 1, 2, 3, let it go for 6 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Because anyone who has pain usually has a tight pelvic floor, and we don't want them to get increased spasm or spasticity or hypertonicity, so we make it a more flexible pelvic floor. And should never ever get pain with pelvic floor exercises. Have you ever had pain with pelvic floor?
No, I haven't.
Good. So you can overtrain the pelvic floor too, so it's always important to cover all bases. But it's a pretty simple formula. 10 quick, 10 slow, in standing, 5 times a day.
Great.
Spread out over the day.
And you're living
proof. 5 times a day?
Yeah. But you when you started, had quite a weak pelvic floor, so I was going to fatigue it. So we settled on 3 sets a day for you, and you still had good improvement. But I was aware that we were going to overload yours as well. So you're doing what I prescribed, and I didn't need to change it because you improved so quickly.
Mm. So how many pads a day are you wearing now? Just this one shield in the daytime?
Yeah.
You must be so happy.
Hey? Oh, I am. I'm so happy. And it's not really, it just, I leak every once in a while. It's not full or anything like it used to be. Like when I changed the pad in the past, it was heavy and full.
Mm.
Now it's not.
So it just goes to show what a small change in what you've done makes such a massive difference, isn't it?
Yeah. And you don't wear anything, any pads or anything at night anymore, do you?
No, nothing at night.
Hmm.
So what's the goal? No more pads at all, ever?
Well, I actually saw George this morning and I said, you email me when you've stopped wearing pads, which will be in the next 1 to 2 months. So you should get a complete resolution of it, because the progress has been so quick. It really just showed what we needed to focus on.
Mm, that's great. So have we got anything else to add about continence, and then we're going to get into my side, which is just making penises hard, really. No, it's a bit more than that. But
no, well, I guess if we could talk about why you think you benefited so much from here. We had a bit of brief chat this morning, but it seems as though where you're located, there's not as much support, or it took a longer time to get support.
Yeah, I think it comes down to communication.
Okay.
I'm finding information while I'm here about different things, and it's knowing the right questions to ask and where to ask them. And it's out there. It's just a matter of getting the message out, finding out all the different areas that you can
get help with. Because, of course, my next question went, why are you here? Let's talk about how your sexual function's been going, and, you know, Melissa is just next door. Maybe we could get you to see her. And you said, I've had none. And that was 1 year after the surgery.
Yeah, none.
So I texted Melissa and I said, Melissa, got this gorgeous couple from Canada. She goes, I'll put them in as soon as I can if I get a cancellation, sorry. And before we knew it, next time I'd seen you 2 weeks later, you'd already seen Melissa.
Yeah. The two of you have just been amazing, how you've accommodated my trip here. It's just been absolutely fantastic.
I think it's, you just waved a challenge in front of us. 1 year post-op and no help. We can fix it.
Yeah. So then you went off to see Melissa?
I did, yes.
I hope you're enjoying today's episode. And as a thank you for being a part of our podcast community, I have an exclusive offer for you. If you would like our assistance with sexual health, head on over to www.melissahadleybarrett.com/programs and use the code TPP5 at the checkout. Here you will find everything you need to know to be on the path to penile perfection. And now back to our episode. And so tell us about that. So before you had the surgery, did you know you would have a problem with your sexual function after? Was that explained to you?
Not really, no. I didn't know exactly what would end up or how, you know. Mm. I just, no idea.
There wasn't, and you weren't referred to anybody who does like what I do. So when you went home and you finally got over, you know, almost losing your life, I imagine for a period of time it wasn't probably such a big issue. And then how long post-op did you start to think, hey, what's going on down there? He's not doing what he used to.
Yeah, it's still not doing what he used to.
But how long did it take you before you kind of noticed that?
It just seems to be constant. You notice right away, actually.
Mm-hmm. I guess once you had the catheter for so long too.
Catheter. Once the catheter was out, I started, you know, like, is it ever going to be sexual again?
Yeah. Mm. And nobody had even told you could have an orgasm without an erection, had they?
No.
But, and I can't remember, had you figured that out before I met you or not yet?
No.
No. And so I know when I met you, you were really worried about the shrinkage and you weren't having any erectile function at all and you weren't using a pump or anything like that. So we started you off on a pump. What did you think about that?
I was actually using a pump.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it just for, not for sexual, and I still don't really use it for sexual, but the pump has been really good to sort of get halfway to that erection.
Mm-hmm. And who gave you the pump originally then? How did you know to use that?
Just the internet.
Oh, good. Just Googling. Yeah. Googling, great.
So you had to find that out yourself as well.
Yeah. That's right. And I do remember now. So I gave you the regime to use, wasn't it? Because you weren't really. Mm-hmm. How were you using it before? Just pumping it up.
Just pumping it up.
Yeah. Okay. And now you're doing the three repetitions, holding it for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also started you on Tadalafil because you weren't on any of those medications, were you? And pretty quickly you noticed that your penis looked a bit healthier, a bit more alive, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, it seemed to be shrinking and shrinking. You know, it seemed to be getting smaller and smaller. That was, you know, the man's worst fear, you know.
And how does he look now? Is he looking pretty good?
He's getting there.
Yeah.
He's looking a lot better.
Yeah, good. And then I know I showed you injections, how to do injections, yeah. And I know you'd already heard of them because you'd found them on the internet as yeah. well. And Ham, what did you think about that? Like,
I heard about injections long, long ago, like even before the operation. And the first thing is you think of somebody getting an injection in your penis is a total no.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Totally no. And it was never really, you know, and that was my attitude. Somebody would mention it to me and I'd say no. And then they'd drop it. Nobody took the time to explain just what is involved in it. And after talking to Melissa, I thought, yeah, let's try this.
It helps when you're waving around a giant penis in front of you, doesn't yeah. it? Saying, you could look like this.
Your plastic model.
Yeah, my plastic model.
Plastic model.
Yeah. But also you hadn't seen the auto-injector, had you? So you were assuming no. that you just had to stick a needle straight in.
Yeah. And it's just a fear. Like, it just never...
Oh, I think that's a very normal fear.
And, you know, nobody took the time to, whether it was because I was so negative against it, that they just didn't want to, you know, figured it was a lost cause or what. But I definitely needed a better explanation and better information about what was happening.
So we gave you your first injection, and what did you think that day? I know you were very nervous.
Oh, yes, very much so. I was impressed because it was actually a lot bigger than, you know.
Did the injection hurt?
I can't remember which one. One of them hurt.
Yeah, the first one didn't. The first one you got a semi-erection and you were quite happy with. And then we did some tests and one of them you reacted to the L-prostadil. There's that one drug talk about that one in 20 men get pain in the shaft and you definitely had that aching feeling in the shaft.
Yeah, that one was a little on the extreme side.
Yeah, and then what was it like when you did your first injection yourself? Like, were you and your wife nervous?
Yeah, my wife was really nervous.
Understandably.
She's doing the injecting and she's a little nervous about the whole thing, but it's...
Yeah, and so I think we did about 4 or 5 tests, didn't we, before we came up with the right dose, and now we're at the right dose. And how do you feel about it now? Like, are you feeling relatively confident going home and being able to do this yourself at home?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're ready to venture there.
Yeah. Yeah, great. And what was it just, I just can't imagine what it would be like to have a penis that didn't work for 12 months and then suddenly it did. And I mean, I know from some of the text messages you sent me, you were very excited when it worked properly.
Yeah, it's the first step, definitely. It was amazing to be, you know, that it did what it did. Like, it was an erection and it was there.
Yeah.
Now, the next step is, you know, the orgasm and everything else, but that didn't happen then. But the fact that I was getting also some feeling down there, whereas before it was just like a wet noodle. There was no feeling.
I haven't spoken to you for a couple of weeks. Have you been able to have an orgasm yet, or do you feel like you're close to one?
I feel like I'm close to one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've got feelings down there, and I'm just like so excited about that. You know, like that.
Right.
It's sexual feelings. That's what I.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I can still feel down there, but it's the sexual arousement that I haven't had for over a year.
Yeah, now you feel like you're getting that back.
And now it's coming back.
Yeah, that's great. And have you, has your surgeon ever told you whether he was able to save any nerves or not?
Yes, I asked my GP and he got in touch with my surgeon and the report looks like there was no damage done to them by the sounds of it.
So, and we've talked about this before, but I think, you know, the research says something different, but anecdotally, we're probably seeing between 60 and 70% of men who have nerve-sparing surgery returning to pre-op function. But I think you have to think that your odds aren't going to be as good as that, purely because you had that 3 months of all of that drama that went on for you and you would have had extra swelling and all of that. So, you know, in an ideal world, hopefully things will start to come back. But at least now you know that if they don't, you've got an alternative option. You can keep your penis healthy and you can keep using injections.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely like the beginning of the whole journey was a nightmare. And I was a little worried about coming on the podcast because I didn't want it to sound negative.
Yeah.
But it's part of the journey, and I guess, but it's looking really good now.
And isn't it great that you've turned it around?
it is that we have turned it around. Yeah. You know?
And this morning you said, I want to be really positive in this podcast. And I said, absolutely. No, you don't have to be. You need to just share your story as you're comfortable to do, because there's always going to be someone listening who thinks they're having a really rough time. And then they hear your story, 52 days in hospital, 3 months a catheter, and they actually start to feel a bit better. And then if you hear something too positive that's just so far away from your own experience, that's even more deflating. So I said, feel free to just share how it was, because there's value in that.
No, definitely. And I know recently I interviewed a younger man who got his erections back with the catheter in. Mm. And I've had so many emails from listeners going, I hate that guy. You know, like, so people who are pre-surgery are like, oh, that's really great. It's nice to know that that's a possibility. Yeah. But men who are having a hard time, they, you know, they're joking, obviously, but they're like, oh, we don't like him because he's had such a good time of it. Mm. So it's, we need to present both stories, because some people have fantastic outcomes and some people have crappy outcomes for the while, and you've turned it around to be a positive. So I think it is a good story.
There's one thing I want to mention too. The result, the two of you have done such a great job, but there's also an organization here, Prost, that is just amazing. It's a group of guys. We go exercise, and they basically just have taken me in under their wings, and we work out twice a week, and it's been just great. And we go for coffee afterwards and complain and bitch about everything. So
that's good. And I think I told you about it, that when you first got here. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep. So you, you were really quick in going and joining up. So
right away.
And now you've made all these new friends here.
I have.
And they want him to set up a Prost in Canada.
I was going to say, how amazing would that be?
Yeah,
that'd be great. Mm. Well, it's been wonderful to meet you and your wife. So thank you so much. And thank you for being on the podcast today. And, thanks, Joe, for telling George to come and meet me, because it's been a challenge. And I think we've got there. And now we just need to make sure that someone in Canada can keep prescribing that medication for you so he can keep working.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering how that could be.
Yeah.
Continued.
I've done that with quite a few people before where we just are like, now that we know what the mix is, we'll just send a letter, and then they should be able to get it compounded exactly the same, or we might have to tweak it a bit, but pretty close.
That's awesome. I just wanted to say the growth I've seen in you has been massive, like just your self-confidence, and I think that probably allowed you to be more open to receive the treatments as well. So a lot of the time if guys are stuck in continence and pads, they can't really see beyond that. So then it's difficult to move on the sexual thing. You're like, I can only deal with this at the moment. So you might not have realized at the time that maybe you were closing a few doors, but that was only because that's what you could cope with at the time. And it does tend to shift from the continence to the sexual function and then relationship combining back in. So it's really a lot on your whole well-being mentally as well at that much earlier stage. So I think there's so much that goes on, isn't there?
There is. It's just, I'm speechless in a lot of ways, you know. It's just been so good. I was a volunteer fireman for 20 years over in Canada. So, and being physically fit was so important.
Yeah.
And I felt when I went in for this operation, I was in great shape, and it'd be just a walk in the park.
Mm.
And then it turned out to be something totally different.
Yeah.
But now it looks like the door is opening and there's sunshine, and it's so good.
That's great. I've got one question to ask. What did your daughter think when you came over here to visit her for this 6-7 weeks and you were taking off all the time to a Prost exercise class and off to see these strange women who
needles
were helping you
fit
your penis? Yeah, what was she thinking about all of this?
We didn't go into a lot of detail. But she is in the medical field, so she was 100% behind me all the way. In fact, she drove me here this morning to see Joe. So she's been there 100%.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you again. It's been wonderful to meet you and your wife.
Thank you, George.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Penis Project. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you could leave a review and subscribe for regular updates. Your support plays a big role in spreading awareness and helping more men to access this information. The more followers we have, the more podcast platforms that recommend our show to others. This might be just the place where your friend, brother, neighbour with lingering questions finally discovers the answers. Stay connected with me on social media and join the Melissa Hadley Barrett email list for news about upcoming podcast episodes, blogs, and lots more. If you have a personal story that you'd like to share, or you're a health professional working in this field, I would love to hear from you. If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast or a listener with specific topics you'd like us to cover, please send me an email at admin@melissahadleybarrett.com. Thanks again for being a part of the Penis Project podcast community. And until next time, take care.